This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Right, thanks for being there. It's time to blow our brains wide open with a brand new episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name is Dan. This is the only show that spins you through the universe, takes a little peek at all the incredible stuff that's inside, and then gets you back home before anyone notices you've gone. Now, this week, we learn all about the strange disease that's killing loads of trees. Also, we've got some guest on the show today, an actual roller coaster designer. We'll speak to him in just a sec about what must be one of the greatest jobs in the world, and we'll answer some of your science questions in a little bit. First, let's catch up with our alien friends, N and G, who are searching for a way to get back home.
N and G's Meter Motivator.
So, guys, you know all about energy, right?
No, we are energy.
Solar system specialists, no less. So, what's up?
Well, I'm on a mission to find out more. I know that energy we use in our homes comes through meters that you have to read. I mean, how do you read energy? It's not like it's a book. And where does the energy even come from?
Well, that's an easy one. Come on, let's see where it all starts.
We're deep under your Earth's surface. This is where energy companies drill thousands of feet down to reach reserves of natural gas. Gas is one kind of energy that's used to heat your cozy habitats and cooking appliances.
Once extracted, it is stored until needed and then delivered to homes, factories, schools, hospitals, you name it, through a network of pipes known as the gas mains. These pipes connect to your home through a meter that measures how much gas is being used.
Kind of like a turnstile, clicking each time more gas goes through.
Totally. And electricity is just the same. Every time you flip a switch or plug in a device, it's there. And like gas, it's come a long way.
Electricity is made at power stations by huge generators. Most power stations today use gas or nuclear to fuel the generators. But some use wood, and obviously wind and water can be used to generate electricity.
The electricity is distributed through a network of cables called the National Grid. You'll have seen the huge pylons that crisscross the country. Smaller wires under pavements carry electricity into your homes. And just like gas, there's a meter to check how much is being used so your gran gets the right bill.
So, let me get this straight. Meters are machines that measure how much gas and electricity are used, so energy companies can make sure you're charged the right amount.
Exactly. Let's take a look for ourselves. Now, where could they be?
Hey, this is my gran's house. Her electricity meter is under the stairs.
Wow, it's darker than the gloom caverns of Mordulus Infernal in here.
Let me throw some light on the situation.
So, yeah, look up there. That's the electricity meter. I can see there's a dial that's turning quite quickly, probably because the lights are on and Gran's got supper cooking. There are also numbers to read. No wonder Granny has to stand on a chair to read the numbers.
Galactic goblins, that doesn't sound safe.
And her gas meter is outside, by the front door in its own little box. It also has numbers that Gran has to write down.
Knowing about how we measure energy is the first stage to becoming a marvellous meter motivator. And being a meter motivator is great to help people around you, like your Gran.
Watch out. Looks like we're gonna fuse, G. Time for us to pop.
Here it comes. Woo-wee! I love a bit of fusion.
Bye, energy, and thanks.
Here it comes.
Now remember, if you've got a science question rattling around your brain that you just can't figure out the answer to, well, I can help out with it. Leave it as a review over on Apple Podcasts, if that's how you're listening to the show. Drop us 5 stars, put your name on there as well so I can give you a shout out. There's a little comment box at the bottom. That's where you ask your question. Just like this, from Wilkie in Melbourne. Hey Melbourne, hey Wilkie, thanks for getting in touch. They ask, how do meteors catch on fire in space? I think you mean, Wilkie, when they're coming out of space, back to, well, to Earth, really. What happens is when a small meteor, when it enters the Earth's atmosphere, it's going from travelling in a vacuum, because there's nothing in space, to travelling through air. Now, travelling through a vacuum is easy, it's effortless, there's nothing that's slowing it down or getting in its way. It takes no energy, but travelling through air is a whole different story. You see, a meteor moving through a vacuum of space, it can travel tens of thousands of miles an hour. And when it's doing that, then it hits the Earth's atmosphere. It's then got loads of air in its way. And so the air has to move and it has to compress really, really quickly. And when air compresses, it gets hot and it burns red like fire. And re-entry temperatures can get as high as 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And this pretty much burns the meteor until there's nothing left. That's why it sets on fire, Wilkie, because it's going from a vacuum to quite a thick atmosphere in a really short space of time. Thanks for the question. If you've got one that you want answered, leave it as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly over on Apple Podcasts. And stay there because I've got a roller coaster expert on the show in just a sec answering another one of your questions. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, this week, our special guest has, very simply, one of the greatest jobs in the whole world. Patrick Marks is a ride engineer in Europa Park. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, I'm so excited to speak to you. I've got so many questions just about roller coasters because, you know, they're one of the funnest things to go on, but I'm not sure how well we understand the science that goes into it. So firstly, Patrick, when you've got an idea for a roller coaster, what's the first thing that you do before you start building it?
Yeah, though there are many things I have to do before I start building. First, we need the idea of what we want to have. Do we want to have a big roller coaster, a small roller coaster, a fast roller coaster? Do we want to have loopings? Do we want to have just hills and steep drops? Or do we want to have something for the family, for smaller kids? So it's very important to know for which group of people this roller coaster is, because not every coaster is suitable for everyone.
So Patrick, if I say to you right now, I want to build the biggest roller coaster that the world has ever seen, what's the first thing that comes into your mind as an engineer? What are the big problems that we might face building this together?
So technical problems are not really there, because we can build a 200-meter high roller coaster. We can build everything you want, but the problem is the body of the people who are riding a roller coaster, because the body has to go through this gravity, through this force, through this speed, and one point it's just too dangerous to let people on a roller coaster when it's too intense for the people. So it's not a technical issue to build the biggest, fastest roller coaster. It's more the person sitting in there.
What do you mean about the person sitting in there? So what happens then to our body when we speed down a vertical drop, when we go over a few loop-de-loops? What's going on with things like G-forces that affect the way that we are?
So it's basically all about the G-forces. So we have certain numbers how high the G-forces can be. I mean, the G-force is the force you experience when you're on a roller coaster. When you're going through in a steep drop and at the bottom of the drop, you feel these forces pressing you into the seat. These are these famous G-forces. And they can only go to a certain height that it's still enjoyable for the body.
So Patrick, what is a G-force? I know you've just said it's... You know, it makes us feel like we're getting pressed into the seat. But very simply, what actually is a G-force? Like, I know the name, but I don't really know much about what it really is.
So a G-force, we feel the G-forces all the time. So when we stand on the ground, we have one G-forces. This means that is the Earth pulling us to the ground is one G. The G stands for gravity. So if I'm 80 kilograms heavy, or if I'm 100 pounds heavy, I feel 100 pounds on pressure on my body all the time. You feel this now, and when you stand, when you sit, you feel this all the time. But you are used to that. But in a roller coaster, this number can go much higher because we press you in the seat through the forces, through the motions the roller coaster makes, these forces will press you in the seat, and the G forces are up to 4 or 5 G's, which means 5 times your body weight is pressing on your body. So if you are a heavy person, that's a lot of weight pressing on your body, and your body only can resist a certain amount of G-forces.
But what would happen when it suddenly can't resist it anymore, Patrick? What goes on inside our body when we're subjected to G-forces that are just too strong? Do organs start popping out all over the place? What happens?
It sounds funny, but it's not exactly like that. So the first thing, when G-forces are too high, or when you don't, when your body cannot really handle the G-forces, is mostly it's nose blooding. So your nose will blood, and you see that as the first action of that. That starts at around 6 or 7 G's with a healthy person. After that, you will see also in your eyesight, you will lose the ability to watch colors. Then you will lose the ability to see at all. You get a gray out, you get a black out, and then more and more G's you have, you don't see this on a roller coaster normally. If so, that would be a very bad roller coaster. But then you will lose your control about the body. But that's around 9 or 10 G's.
So if you know how high you can take your roller coasters without subjecting us to too much G-force, how else are you trying to push the boundaries and make roller coasters better? What ideas do you designers and engineers have for future coasters that might make us even more excited than the ones we have today do?
You have to be creative. I mean, it's a creative job. You have to play around how you sit in a roller coaster. You have to play around how you go through certain elements like loopings. I mean, a standard looping, it's nothing special anymore. So we invent different kinds of loopings, or how we call that, inversions. Inversion is something which brings you, let's say the feet are up, the head is down. That's the inversion. So we have to be creative in that kind of direction.
Is there anything aside from massive drops and loads of loops that you can't build?
No, not really. So the options are kind of endless. We can do everything as long as it is enjoyable for the guest. I mean, that's everything. We build a huge machine, and the machine is just for making joy to the guest riding it. But technically, we can build everything.
And I know that roller coaster technology has developed hugely over the last 50 or so years. How do you power? This sounds really simple, but how do you power roller coasters nowadays? Is it done, you know, with a crank lifting you up and dropping you? Are there magnets in play? What happens there, Patrick?
There are many different options. So we have three different kinds of, like, groups. How do you accelerate a roller coaster? First is the classic roller coaster. It's a lift hill and a chain on the lift hill, and we pull the train up to the top, and then gravity does the rest. So we just let it go, and at the end, the train will end in the station without any more power putting into the train. The second one is we accelerate the train with, like, magnetic induction modules. We can do that with a hydraulic launch. We can do this with a pneumatic launch, with air pressure. So there are several options just to accelerate the train. If, let's say we have a coaster in a park, there we do 0 to 70 miles per hour in around 2.5 seconds. So it's a very fast acceleration. There are coasters in the world, they are even faster. So that's kind of a different kind of coaster, because you don't have this fear of heights when you go up a lift hill and you go higher and higher and higher, and it's starting to getting more and more exciting. You're really getting shot out of a black hole sometimes, and from 0 to 100 miles per hour in a couple of seconds. So that's really crazy. And the third option is that we have a motor on the train itself. so that the train is attached to a bus bar to electricity, and the train drives on the track with a wheel going on the track, which is attached to a motor.
And lastly, Patrick, do I really need to wear the safety harness? Won't the speed keep me in the loop anyway? Won't all the G-force that are pushing me into this chair squash me so I don't fall out?
The safety harness, sometimes you wouldn't need it if you would be able to stay seated on your seat. But the safety harness is also for us a security that the people stay in a kind of position in a healthy position at all times. So you can imagine when you maybe put your head down between your legs, then it's not that healthy to ride a roller coaster, because it's just your body is in the wrong direction to ride this roller coaster. So the forces will come into your body in the wrong direction and can hurt you. So the safety harness is mainly for keeping people in place, but also there are roller coasters. They are designed that you really be pulled out of the seat. So you have negative G-force, how we call that. So there, of course, you need the safety harness. Otherwise, you would fly away.
Amazing. Patrick Marks, ride engineer at Europa Park over in Germany. Thank you so much for just explaining the greatest job in the world for us on the Science Weekly. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome.
Now, this week's Dangerous Dan is a little bit of a strange one, because it's something that we associate with love and with Christmas and with kissing. But mistletoe is devastating to other nature. It almost tries to kill trees. Mistletoe is a plant. It looks green, normally with little leaves and white berries attached to them as well. But ultimately, it's a parasite. And parasites attach themselves to unsuspecting prey and use them to survive. Now, mistletoe will attach itself to a tree, like a poplar or a sycamore or a hawthorn, and it will send its roots deep down into the tree's branches. And up these roots, it will suck up water and other important nutrients from the host tree to make itself bigger and stronger. Now, most other plants, they put their roots in the ground, and using them to take in the water and the nutrients from the soil and photosynthesizing with the sun, that's how they survive. But mistletoe, the cute, romantic, festive shrub, it's an evil thief. It doesn't do that. Instead, it steals everything it needs from other plants, which is just incredible. That's what I love about science. You never know, these things are going on around the world all the time. And also, mistletoe can be quite poisonous to humans if we eat it as well, which means it's properly earned its place on our Dangerous Dan list. Right, let's catch up with Technomum, our geeky guru, who's here to answer all of your gadget questions.
Technomum, engineering explorers.
I love coming up with ideas for cool new gadgets. Not surprising, really, when my mum's an engineer. I'm pretty sure she's going to be mega impressed with my latest creation. Jet-propelled roller skates. Just a quick burst of turbo here, and the momentum will carry you along the wheels before liftoff.
That'd certainly make it quicker to get to school. Not a bad thing when I have to tell you 100 times to hurry up.
You'd be chasing me up the road in these.
That'll make a nice change. You know, there are engineers out there working on other cool new ways to get things up in the air.
What kind of engineers?
Aeronautical and aerospace engineers.
Aeronautical and aerospace engineers? I guess what they have in common is the air.
That's right. Both involve working with aircraft, things which you make that can fly.
Like an enormous jumbo jet or even a rocket. Cool.
It could be, but they also create smaller things, like satellites the size of this table or drones that fit in one hand. There's lots of exciting new technology, and it comes in all shapes and sizes.
So, what's the difference between aeronautical and aerospace engineers?
Aeronautical engineers work with aircraft that operate inside the Earth's atmosphere, things like planes, helicopters and drones. Aerospace engineers work on things which operate...
Let me guess, in space?
You're very bright, aren't you? I wonder where you get it from.
I'd love a job working on planes, or better still, rockets.
Well, there's no reason why you can't. Aerospace engineers are busier than ever. Check out this video. A lot of new aerospace jobs have been created because of our need for satellites. We're using more and more of them all the time. not just for watching the telly, but to observe the Earth and the atmosphere. Over the next 10 years, it's expected that there will be over 3,000 launch. That's a lot of launches. And they don't just magically appear up in orbit. Something has to carry them into orbit. This aerospace engineer is working on a space plane, which will fly both to outside of our atmosphere. It could carry satellites into orbit or take supplies to the International Space Station, which is a satellite itself.
So a space plane is kind of like a delivery van?
A very fast, very high-tech van, yes. This prototype plane has taken some test flights, and the engineer is looking at the results on a computer. It looks like part of the fuselage has been damaged. She's investigating why that might be. Because things like space planes are extremely complex, engineers often work in teams, and being good at detail is critical because safety is so important. Now, while some engineers will be coming up with creative solutions,
like my jet-propelled roller skates,
perhaps, while other engineers will be more focused on checking that the plans have been correctly followed, helping to figure out why things might not have gone as planned.
Cool job.
There are loads of cool jobs for engineers. Almost as many jobs as there are inventions.
Speaking of inventions, I think I can feel another idea coming on. Levitating trousers.
Engineering Explorers, created with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology to celebrate the Year of Engineering. Find out more at funkislive.com/technomum.
Let's do this week's Science in the News. A mystery disease is killing beech trees, and it's now spreading across the USA. The beech leaf disease causes a dark staining pattern on the leaves. They then shrivel, and then the tree dies. Now, scientists say there's no signs of insects getting involved. They don't even know why it's caused, but they know it needs to be identified quickly, because if it spreads widely, this can have huge ecological effects. Also, growing meat in the lab may do more damage to the climate than meat from cattle, because at the moment, cattle meat is an issue because of the methane that the cows produce and the rainforests that need to be chopped down for farming. But apparently, energy used in the lab may be more harmful to the world than first thought. And finally, ZSL London Zoo has shared a selection of x-rays made during health checks of its 18,000 animals. The images reveal the inner workings of loads of species, from frogs to snakes to geckos to turtles, and it helps the team that work there understand these creatures massively. These are incredible photos. Honestly, do yourself a favour. Search for the ZSL London Zoo x-rays on the internet and just spend some time looking at the insides of these amazing creatures. I promise you won't be disappointed. That is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for travelling around the universe with me. If you want to catch up on any more of the series that you've heard so far in the show, we had Technomum, we had NNG as well. We've got loads more of them for free for you to find on the Apple Podcast Store, Spotify, wherever you get your shows from. There's also on the free Fun Kids app, and you can find us at funkidslive.com. Oh, and remember, if you do have a science question and you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, that's where you need to let me know what it is. I'll find an expert to answer it for you. Just leave it as a review over there. Now, Fun Kids, we're a kids radio station from the UK. You can find us all over the country on your DAB digital radio. Have a listen on the free Fun Kids app. And as always, we're at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.